Professional wrestling is the one true sport. Other sports have their share of intense, dramatic moments, but nothing can compare with professional wrestling. Welcome to Wrestling History X, where three friends come together to talk about the stories behind the matches. I'm Matt.
I'm the producer that's all up in your video.
And I am Shani Chaos.
Welcome to episode 264, WCW Monday Night Nitro.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back to your TV on Monday nights, here comes Nitro.
Oh, and it's a doozy.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely is that.
There's a reason, though. There's a reason we're watching it.
There's always a reason.
I mean, yeah.
It's not always a good reason. But it's a reason.
Yeah. I wasn't mad about this reason. But we probably could have just watched it for.
Yes.
So this is the 99th episode of Monday Night Nitro, produced by WCW. It took place on August 4th, 1997, from the Palace of Auburn Hills in Auburn Hills, Michigan, with an attendance of 17,616 and a rating of 4.4.
Can I get a goddamn?
Yeah, goddamn. That's a whole lot of Michiganians or whatever they're called.
Michigoons?
Michigoons.
There we go.
And just for reference, WWF the same week was a 2.7.
Huh. I might have to just go back and watch that show for fun just to see how it holds up against Nitro outside of the ratings.
Well, I assume that since the NWO has started and become a old phenomenon.
Boring.
I mean, yeah, but at the time it's still a phenomenon. Even though people constantly boo them, but
they're supposed to.
With go away heat, it feels like. Or like they feel, or it feels like they're sick of it. Going to, if the NWO hasn't been, after they've sold this many t-shirts, they can go to all their normal spots and probably draw more people just because of it.
Yeah.
And I assume that's part of the deal here. Plus, they get an extra hour show.
Yeah. But we are in Michigan?
Yep.
So, Shay, did you do what you do?
I did what I do. I didn't do everything that I was going to do, and I realized it once I got here that I thought, let's just have like a somewhat of a meal with like a snack and hot food and something to wash it down with. And I forgot the something to wash it down with. So we'll save that for another time that we're in Michigan, because it's a Michigan original.
Oh.
But what I did do is hopped on the old Google machine and said, what the fuck do people in Michigan eat? And popular choices that came back, apparently they love their fudge. What's that? Somewhere in Time Island?
Mackinac.
Yeah.
Or Mackinac. Mackinac. It's either Mackinac or Mackinac. One side of the bridge is what it's called.
Apparently Mackinac Mackinac making some good fudge up there.
It's very good. I've been
staple
there.
But yeah, I didn't think of it in time to have some shipped here, so I continued my search and found out that one of the really popular places up there is the Coney Islander. They love them some Coneys and some baklava, and I figured, what the hell? There's a Coney place in town here that I've never been to. And decided to give them a try. They're not a Coney Islander. They're just Coney Island. But they've been around since like 1924 or something like that. So, I mean, they're about as old as the one in Michigan, I'm guessing. But yeah, we got some Coneys. And then I looked at their menu and saw that they had baklava as well. So I was like, perfect. Two birds, one stone. I'll leave the other thing unmentioned. But I had the Coneys dressed fully with chili, cheese, onions, mustard, and then I hit them with a little sprinkle of cayenne on top before they wrapped them up. I've been to the one downtown Oklahoma City before. They did theirs similar to like what I'm used to in Tulsa, where they put it on the little styrofoam tray with the little styrofoam tray on top, wrap a rubber band around it. These ones, they individually wrap them in foil.
They used the right dog, though.
Yep. Did they?
Yeah, it's the
what do we got?
It's like a hotling dog, almost.
Yeah, it's like the real red, like, Schwab's thin guys.
Ooh, Red Dogs.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I think it's Schwab's. I don't know.
Well, let's look here. I mean, it's not going to make any noise. I'm going to take a bite anyways.
If it makes a noise, it will be gross.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's tons of flavor in all of it.
Yeah, hot dogs are one of those things that, like, I don't ever, like, people, I'm not alone in this. People aren't stoked to go to a restaurant and buy hot dogs because they're looked down on as a food, even though everybody likes hot dogs.
Yeah,
it's for the most part. But it's one of those things, like, that's a backyard.
You don't want to be seen going out for hot
dogs. I'm lazy, so I'm going to throw these dogs.
Yeah.
Unless you're at a baseball game.
Yeah. Well, like, nobody's making chili dogs at home. So, like, that's why the
Coney. I mean, I do when, like, I'm lazy and I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah, see, I'll do the hot dog without that. I have a special hot dog.
Oh, yeah. You do have a special hot dog.
But, you make hot dog.
Well, I don't make the hot dog, but I have my own signature hot dog that no one has ever said they don't like.
Okay. Have you tried the new craze with taking a corn dog and turning that into a chili dog? Splitting it open, topping it with some chili and cheese and onions. And
I've not heard of this craze.
Sounds great.
Yes. But it does sound pretty good.
It's pretty damn delicious. I'm not a big hot dog fan, but I get cravings for Coney's every now and then. When we had Mutt's in town,
yeah.
I used to swing by there and get a Liberty dog or something like that with the sauerkraut, mustard, and onions.
That is the one time that when Mutt's was in business, that is the one time that I would go out of my way to go get a hot dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went there a few times. There was also a place, I can't remember what it was called. It was kind of down there, like right outside of the Plaza District. It had a patio, but it was a hot dog place. But it was, they would have like, they were like foot long crazy hot dogs.
Hmm.
And it was like a bar place that had big crazy hot dogs, and their patio was like dog friendly. That was kind of the thing.
Hmm.
I can't remember what it was called, but it was pretty good too. When we get closer to 4th of July, as far as a recording date goes, I will supply my dog. So I'll let you know when we get there.
Is it a Fairberry hot dog?
No. It's just any kind of hot dog. It's the toppings. It's all in the toppings.
It's all in the toppings.
Yeah, like Chicago dog, I got it beat. And the world doesn't even know.
We got a temple dog.
Yeah. It's called a cottage dog. That's a tease.
Well, I also have this baklava here, so... Whoops.
Right. I don't know if I've ever had bad baklava, but
this one
sometimes
very,
it's just
very filo-y and flaky. This one will make some noise. Let's give her a shot.
Oh, yeah.
Glorious. Nice and crispy. Yum. I'm dropping little pieces of filo all over the place.
Yeah, maybe one of the messiest desserts.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've always, since I was a kid, been a fan of baklava. My niece's dad used to make it all the time.
Damn.
And then taught her the recipe, so she makes it for different family events, too.
Very cool. They use the rose water?
I have never made it myself. I just eat it.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably plenty of different variations.
So. I think they use...
The rose water.
I say they use pistachios in theirs, too.
Normally taste, but this one kind of tastes like it's just covered in syrup. or honey, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Coney Island, Southwest 25th here in Oklahoma City. Swing by. Give them a try. This baklava is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something that would happen right around the same time as this nitro.
Uh-oh.
Puff Daddy and Faith Evans would pay tribute to Biggie with their number one hit, I'll Be Missing You.
Yep, this was definitely from this point to about 1999. Puff Daddy made a lot of money for putting out a lot of very mediocre.
Here we had more problems.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a touchy subject these days.
I mean,
PD.
A lot of the fun shows I listen to have been referring to him as the diddler. You guys ever see those photos of him as the dressed up as the Joker last year?
Yeah.
That was very funny. These alleged crimes are true. Pretty horrific stuff. But if you're one of those people that can't separate the art from the artist, at least there's not really any good Puff Daddy songs.
No.
This is probably the best one, and it's just because of the chorus, and all of the songs that are good are because of the chorus. He's not a particularly good rapper or producer, because all of the songs are just... I remember an episode of Celebrity Deathmatch, which I was obsessed with because I was the right age for it.
That's a good show.
But there's an episode where I think it's Sting versus Puff Daddy. And Puff Daddy is
Sting,
like,
the musician.
Sting the musician, yes. Puff Daddy, the joke is that Puff Daddy just steals, like, the chorus from, like, incredibly popular songs or whatever. So he, like, pulls out a crate, a milk crate of, like, records and just starts, like, slinging them at Sting. And it's pretty funny, but it sticks in my mind and is absolutely true. It's like the Godzilla song was probably his last, like, huge hit, and it was just Cashmere. Like,
at least got Robert Plant to play it. So.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I assume he paid for the samples back in the day. It's one of those things that used to not be much of a thing, but after Paul's Boutique Beastie Boys album, yeah, that's why hip hop got away from sampling and the mixtape was created, because they weren't willing to pay for all these samples and get them cleared.
So I wonder if he paid, or did he have video footage of something and just got him to do it for free?
Nah, he paid. Or they'll release the label paid, but it'll be interesting to see how this thing all happens.
I won't lie, this is my, I think, as you guys said, this is the most popular Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Diddler, Sean, whatever the hell you want to call him, song. But it's probably the one that I hate the most, just because it got so much airplay. I know it was out of respect for Notorious B.I.G., but
I had the single.
I hated it.
And I played it over and over.
I liked
and
it a lot.
Over.
And then you turn on the radio and they were playing it over, and then you change the station and that song was just starting on a different station or in the middle of it, and then you switch to a different station, it was just finishing up.
If only Mace didn't find God, maybe Puff Daddy wouldn't have ever gotten so famous. Because Mace, Harlem World, great album. He was much more talented, but he kind of got religious and backed out pretty early. Obviously nothing wrong with that, but
no.
Maybe it could have held Sean Puffy Combs would have just faded away into obscurity. Because,
one could only wish.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ready to Die, the Notorious B.I.G. album.
Mm-hmm. But
that was my most listened to thing on Spotify a couple years ago. I was just blasting it like 3 times a day. I was hooked.
I've never had a most listened to on Spotify, just because I haven't listened to Spotify enough to have a most.
Oh, yeah. That's my go-to for music. Anyway, enough about it.
Well, let's talk Nitro.
Yeah. I was going to say, let's talk about something a little happier, but
There's a positive.
Yeah, there is a positive. So, as we go through this episode, WCW will keep saying this is the 100th episode. But you're probably going, but hey, Matt, you said it was the 99th episode.
I mean, I sure was confused when you said that a few minutes ago.
And I kind of mentioned it a few weeks ago, how WCW had held a special wrestling event that was broadcasted exclusively via the WCW website, but was only an audio stream on June 28th.
Count it.
Calling the show WCW Saturday Nitro. And I guess WCW decided to include it in their count, but nobody else does, so neither will we.
I mean, you'll understand why.
Yes.
But
I mean,
it's right before a show, and, you know, there's a big match here at the end of it.
So we start with Michael Buffer in the ring. So let's get ready to celebrate 100 episodes.
Hey.
Tony Schiavone then welcomes us to the show before the Nitro Girls do a dance for us.
God, I forgot how... I don't know. I don't want to just completely come off as a hater, but the Nitro Girls were always just such a joke.
It's very, very silly, but, I mean, I totally get it. Eric Bischoff's a dweeb, and, you know, they're just...
I get it, but if you're going to do it well. Do it right. Don't be worse than, like, a junior high drill team, And I'm not the...
I mean, the thing is, a lot of these girls were former, like...
Professional
dancers for, like, NBA teams.
But they weren't good.
There's a couple of them that were
Kimberly's
good.
Kimberly's always in there, and it's just, like, she has no rhythm.
I mean, she's the hot one, and that's the one that everyone wants to see, and, she's the worst one.
Yeah, but they're also, maybe they dumbed it down because Kimberly isn't professional. Also, why would they try super hard? Because Eric Bischoff does not give a shit. He just wanted to put pretty ladies on the screen. Mm-hmm. So it's not one of these things like, oh, we need you to be NBA
quality. Well, I mean, we do remember Miss Hogwild, Broadwild, Miss Sturgis, or whatever the competition that they had at the pay-per-view
sold
last
out.
Time. Was it sold out? Okay. Yeah, and we remember the lovely variety of women there. So I guess they did make an upgrade when it came to the Nitro girls. But yeah, it's just... It's awful.
I mean, this is his answer to Sable and Sunny.
Yeah. Who, like, Sunny, incredible performer.
They don't have to dance. They just have to, like, shimmy.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Give me six girls on stage shimmying, and it'd be a whole lot better than them trying to do these routines.
But yeah, but, like, Sunny was an incredible talent for what she did. She just also happened to be incredible looking, whereas Sable is just a face and...
And an ego.
Yeah.
Tony then lets us know he will be joined by Mike Tenay and Larry Zbysko for the first hour, while the NWO theme begins to play. Hollywood Hogan and Eric Bischoff strut down to the ring, while Tenay says the Steiners have a bombshell for the NWO. And Schiavone also lets us know that J.J. Dillon will have an offer for Sting. And Bischoff takes the mic to say that Lex Luger is as dumb as a brick. While Hogan says that when you mess with him, you mess with the whole NWO. And you better be ready to pay your dues. Hollywood continues that he had everybody ready to watch Road Wild. Where Luger was going to be the lamb he was going to slaughter. But somehow WCW finagled the paperwork to force a world title match tonight. So Lex better be ready for Hogan to drag him through the mud and prove that he is a god that made wrestling. And Hogan says that after he wipes the mat with Luger, Scott Hall is going to get that title match at Road Wild. And I'm like, that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Would we have seen the finger poke of doom 2 years earlier?
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like they're just telegraphing. It's like, it's the beginning of the show. You don't have to say the Scott Hall thing.
No. We then go back to the commentators who say that Hollywood and his attorneys had attempted to get the match canceled, but they were unsuccessful. So, you know what the main event is now.
Yep.
Let's see what it takes to get there. As we go to our first match... Mortis with James Vandenberg versus Kurt Hennig.
Hey, Mortis is having a match with somebody that's not Sub-Zero.
Yes.
I mean, Glacier. I mean, Ernest the Cat. Yeah. Sergeant. Well, at least it's somebody else.
Sergeant. Somebody.
Craig Pittman?
Pittman. There we go.
This is a pro-Pittman podcast.
Yes.
So it's a feeling out process to start until a drop kick from Kurt, but Mortis comes right back with a kick after Vandenberg distracts Hennig, only for Kurt to deliver a shot to the gut and a running knee lift that sends Mortis crashing out to the floor. Hennig follows out where Vandenberg looks to interfere, but he gets drilled, allowing Mortis to again use the distraction to his advantage. Now back in the ring, Mortis with a turnbuckle smash, scoop slam, and an attempted elbow drop. Only for Kurt to avoid and fire up with chops, a snapmare, and a neck snap. Hennig's whip is reversed with Mortis catching and hitting Kurt with an inverted atomic drop, following up with a spinning heel kick for a two count, as the announcers talk about how it's been a year since Sting has talked.
What a job.
Mortis then goes for a powerbomb, but Hennig counters it into a double leg takedown, crushing the shin with a knee drop before nailing the Hennigplex for the pin and the win.
It's a bummer they can't say what it is.
Yeah, and like the Hennigplex just doesn't have the same ring to it.
The nope. Awesome plex, the pristine plex.
There you go.
So at least it sounds better. It's not as good as perfect plex, but it means the same thing. Wait, it's a synonym.
I wish they could have called it like the almost perfect plex.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're all happy to see Kurt.
Yes.
So we go to commercial, but we come back to a video retrospective of the last year of Sting's life, where we see highlights of Surfer Sting making his speech before re-emerging as Crow Sting, hanging out in balconies and rappelling down to the ring while using his bat.
I mean, great package. It makes me just miss Surfer Sting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just because I want to see Sting wrestle. You know, obviously, he's cool and over as hell doing nothing. And because of that, he probably had a much longer career.
So we go to our second match. Hector Guerrero and Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Ooh, Chavo.
Versus Jeff Jarrett and Dean Malenko with Queen Deborah.
I love Dean Malenko so much.
Yep.
And we haven't seen Hector since Return of the Funker, episode 145.
Obviously an ECW show.
Yep. And Chavo and Dino start us off, going back and forth, when Malenko goes for a tilt-a-whirl, only for Junior to counter with a head scissors takedown and a dropkick. And Double J and Hector both tag in, working mat holds momentarily until Guerrero misses an elbow drop, allowing Jarrett to slug away, only for Hector to come back with hip tosses and a dropkick. Guerrero turns his back to jaw with Dean, so Double J takes advantage to attack from behind, delivering a snap suplex and stomps, before bringing Malenko in for a body slam that gets a two count. Jarrett returns with a running straddle of Hector. Dean with a dropkick for a near fall. Double J's comes back in, only to telegraph a back body drop. So Guerrero nails a sunset flip and a backslide pin for a two count. And Jarrett recovers to drop Hector with a shinbreaker, and he sets up for the figure four, when Chavo would jump in the ring with a dropkick. Malenko gets tagged and he goes to slam Hector, only for Guerrero to counter it into a roll-up for a near fall, followed by chops and a back elbow, before going for a victory roll. But Dean reverses into an electric chair drop. Malenko locks in the Texas Cloverleaf, while Double J knocks Chavo out to the floor for the submission and the win. Post-match, Jarrett struts, with Dean just staring at him as we go to commercial.
Dean has no time for this.
Son of a bitch.
We come back to Mean Gene at ringside, trying to speak to Raven, when Stevie Richards sneaks up behind Okerlund with a piece of paper, saying that they ran into a snag with Raven's WCW contract. Stevie says he was at CNN Center for the past 2 weeks working on that contract, and it has been renegotiated to make sure Raven can follow the trail that he has blazed here in WCW. And Richards hands the contract to Raven, who leafs through it, but gets up and spits in Stevie's face.
Ooh.
Before shoving him down.
Ooh.
Raven tosses the contract to the floor and tries to punch Richards, but Stevie blocks, saying he won't be abused anymore. So Raven just smiles, turns, and leaves. Tony then says that WCW wants you...
Me?
...to be part of the excitement of a Nitro party. Send videos, cards, or letters of ideas for a Nitro party. Each week they will select one to win a Nitro party pack of games, merch, wrestler recipes.
What?
And a Nitro party planner.
I mean,
should we write in right now?
And I'm like, I just want to get some wrestler right now. Recipes? Any of you are listening and you received any of these wrestler recipes, please send them to our Twitter or our email at wrestlinghistoryx@gmail.com or Twitter, also known as X, at wrestlinghistox.
The it's so funny that WCW was the cool one at one point, because everything they do that they think is cool is corny as fuck. And this is just a further, more blatant example of it. It's like, yeah, WWF's always been a little cheesy because it's trying to reach everybody, and it's getting to the point now where they're moving into the Attitude Era, but it's happening, like, basically at the same time that WCW is NWOing and Nitro Girling and all of this stuff, and WWF doesn't come off nearly as corny. Like, Nitro Party is cornier than the Godwins, who are less corny now. We just watched them recently, and they have a slight new coat of paint on them to be just, like, big southern ass-kickers instead of, you know, comedy hillbillies or whatever.
Yep. They took all the corn from their matches and just put it in that slot bucket that they pour over the top of people's heads.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's just so funny. Nitro Girls, Nitro Party, like... How about middle fingers and anti-establishment shit? And it's like, Eric Bischoff being a part of the NWO stops it from being anti-establishment. And so you can see right through it. It's so silly. Anyway, just, you know, being a little annoyed, that's all.
Deep thoughts by Michael.
We go to our third match. Lenny Lane, Scott D'Amore, and Joey Maggs. Versus Giant.
Damn it, I should have went with Lenny Shane for my name.
Is this the same Scott D'Amore?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, none of these guys really look like him, but a few pounds ago.
Yes. 10 years. Scott D'Amore is better known as the former, most recent booker of TNA, as he's unfortunately been let go for...
Nobody really knows exactly.
For being good at his job?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
The last time we saw Mags was at World War III, 95, episode 173.
I assume he was in the triple We Need Guys.
Absolutely. You remember him in the match, too.
Okay, good. Yeah, of course I do. No, it's just deductive reasoning. A bit of a sleuth.
So all three men charge at the Giant as the bell rings, but he just swats them away. Giant with headbutts, shoves, knees, right hands, before whipping D'Amore and Mags into Lane in a corner and following in with a corner splash. Giant then chokeslams all three men right next to each other, making the cover on all three of them for the pins
and the wins.
Post-match, Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth appear in the entranceway with a mic, saying Giant is out of control, but at Sturgis, the madness will be in control. And Savage continues that Giant should stay put because he doesn't want any of Macho. But of course, the big man heads up the rampway, only for Savage to take off as we go to break. And we come back from commercial. WCW Saturday Night serves as a 2-hour Road Wild pregame show.
So not only do we have a 3-hour Nitro, but we got a 2-hour pre-show coming up too.
We're not going to cover the 2-hour pre-show.
Thank you.
Hennig, DDP, Alex Wright, and the Nature Boy will all be checked in on as the countdown is on. We then go to a Lex Luger video, seeing highlights of him racking Hogan and others.
Torture racking. I was kind of hoping that they were going to be like running up and just like kicking him in the balls and running away.
Old Rochambeau.
We then go to our fourth match. High Voltage of Kenny Chaos and Robbie Rage versus Public Enemy of Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge. And we haven't seen Chaos and Rage since World War III, 96.
Oh, would you look at that.
Episode 229.
Would you like to guess what match they were in?
Oh, I know, brother. Yeah. So, like, do these guys have any other characters that I would know?
No.
They just were High Voltage and like kind of, they weren't complete job. They had a name, so they weren't complete jobbers, but they were the low end of the
tag team. Yes, they were big division. Guys who looked like wrestlers.
That had to lose to people that High Voltage don't look like wrestlers.
You want to hear the most interesting story about High Voltage?
I'm listening.
They stole the name from Jeff and Matt Hardy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they sent a... tape in to WCW, and back when they were doing their Omega Backyard Wrestling,
yeah,
their team name was High Voltage.
Yeah.
And WCW stole it. That's the most interesting thing about these two guys.
Yeah.
And you know what? Had the Hardy Boys been High Voltage in a professional wrestling league, I don't think they would have lasted.
I think that they would...
They would have been repackaged and then probably come back as the Hardy Boys.
But I don't think High Voltage is a terrible name. It's just not very... It's not... very inspired. It's like, oh yeah, somebody was like, you know what, I like AC/DC. It's like, yeah, most people kind of like AC/DC. That's what I think of when I hear High Voltage.
And see, I hear High Voltage and it automatically makes me think of High Energy. It's like, you're not Coco, you're not Owen.
Yeah.
You're not even the Anvil.
So Public Enemy sets up a table before getting in the ring, where Johnny starts things off with a swinging neckbreaker and a clothesline to Kenny. And Rocco comes in and misses a clothesline, but knocks Rage off the apron, before turning around into a big left hand from Chaos, before Robbie leaps in with a springboard bulldog, while Zabisco complains about High Voltage's wasting of time between moves.
Hey man, they're just not very good. Just because you can do the move doesn't mean you should do the move. Mm-mm.
Kenny keeps Rock from tagging out, allowing High Voltage to double team him with some clubbering, followed by Rage heading up top, only for Rocco to get a boot up into the chin. But Robbie bounces off the ropes with an elbow drop that Rock avoids as well, so Rocco is able to make the crawl for the
hot tag.
Grunge cleans house with hip tosses, clotheslines. Rock joins back in for a double bulldog on Robbie, before tossing him out to the floor to set him on the table, only for Chaos to make his way over to yank Rage off in time, as Rocco comes flying over the ropes with a somersault senton to go through the table. Hmm. Kenny and Johnny make their way back into the ring, where Chaos nails a backbreaker, followed by a slingshot guillotine leg drop from Robbie. But again, they waste time. Chaos then holds Grunge, with Rage charging in with a clothesline, only for Johnny to duck and cause Kenny to get knocked out to the floor. Grunge then rolls up Robbie for the pin and the win. Post-match, Rage beats down Johnny after the bell, while Chaos brings a shard of table in, holding it up to run Grunge into, followed by slamming it across his back, leaving High Voltage standing tall as we go to break.
I mean, yeah, it's funny that it's like, they're wasting time, they're wasting time. You know where they didn't waste time? Where Rocco Rock was going to go through them on a table in a spot that isn't going to draw any money or do anybody any good. It's like, oh, no, that's for Rocco to do. If he's in a match against Harlem Heat for the belts, Booker T or Stevie Ray might take the bump. But, like, yeah. There was no reason for them to do that here.
We come back from commercial to the Nitro girls dancing on the ramp. When all of a sudden, Alex Wright's behind them, dancing as well.
Kind of love Alex Wright.
Yeah.
Mean Gene comes over to get a word with the Cruiserweight champ, as he had won the week before on Nitro from Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
And Oakland asks about his rematch with Jericho this coming Saturday. But Alex starts speaking in German until Gene cuts him off, telling him to cut out the wiener schnitzel and speak English. And Wright says he speaks to the people that matter to him first. Then he speaks to those he doesn't care about, before telling Chris to watch tonight to see how he will be embarrassed again on Saturday, calling Jericho a kitty cat. So we get our fifth match. Alex Wright versus Scotty Riggs for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. The champion came out first, guys. Foreshadowing. Also, the last time we saw Scotty was at Sold Out 97, episode 238.
Real banger.
And Wright jumps Riggs as he comes in the ring, landing uppercuts and a leg lariat before tossing him to the floor. And Alex continues the punishment with an apron double axe handle, more uppercuts, chops, and a snap suplex. But Scotty retaliates by reversing a whip into a guardrail, before rolling right in and following after with a top rope double axe handle. Riggs lands a back elbow and slams Alex down before heading up top, only for Wright to hit the ropes, causing Scotty to fall off throat first.
Ouch.
Wright then slams Riggs down and comes off the top with a knee drop, does some dancing, but then misses a pair of clotheslines before both men attempt crossbodies at the same time, with Scotty landing on top for a two count.
I mean, it totally checks out. Scotty Riggs has a bit more weight on him. Alex looks great, but you know.
Riggs nails an atomic drop, an enziguri, back body drop, and a drop kick for a near fall, followed by setting Alex up on a turnbuckle. But Wright blocks the superplex, knocking Scotty off to the mat, and then flies off with a missile dropkick for the pin and the win. We head to break, but we come back, and it's hour number two. So, Pyro! Woo!
Hey-hoo! Yeah, I love the Pyro at the top of the hour, because it's like, oh, people are changing channels. If they see Pyro, maybe
they'll stick around.
Maybe their eyes will, you know. And they're like, come on, what's that?
And Bobby the Brain Heenan has now replaced Larry Zbysko at the announcer's booth for our second hour. While Mean Gene is on the ramp, where he brings out Lex Luger, who says he was focused on Sturgis. But opportunity sometimes knocks when you least expect it. And this is the night. It will be the defining moment of his life and career. Lex continues that he heard Hogan spewing his garbage earlier, but when they get in the ring, he will give Hollywood his due, saying he made wrestling what it is today, but Luger will make history tonight as he guarantees he will rack Hogan to become WCW champion.
Kick him in the balls.
Yeah.
We then go to our sixth match, Six versus Chris Benoit. And we have a feeling that process to begin. When the Crippler hits a clothesline, only for the Kid to come back with a spin kick. Six goes for another kick, but Benoit catches it and takes down the Kid with a dragon screw leg whip, followed by a drop kick to send him out to the floor, before also flying through the ropes with a tope suicida. Now back in the ring, the Crippler goes to a turnbuckle, only for Six to kick him, knocking Benoit into a tree of woe, where the Kid delivers several kicks and a Bronco Buster. Six continues with multiple flash leg drops and a Michinoku driver before heading to the top for a somersault leg drop. But the Crippler moves in time.
I mean, somersault leg drop, there's no way it doesn't fucking hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Whether Chris Benoit is there or not, but it's like just taking that flat on your ass in the ring. It's not looking a good time. It looks great as a move.
Yeah, and you can't technically perfect, I guess you can perfect landing, but your aim.
Yeah.
That's the part that always made me nervous, was where the hell is his leg going to actually hit?
Yeah, because if that heel catches somebody, there's no way to lighten the load.
Both men struggle to their feet, where Benoit lays in some chops and a back body drop, followed by a snap suplex for a two count and a back suplex for a near fall. And the Crippler starts to argue with the ref, giving the Kid the opportunity to attack from behind, whipping Benoit to a corner and following in with another Bronco Buster, only for the Crippler to avoid, leaving Six crotched on the top rope.
Yeah.
And Benoit climbs up for a super back suplex when Jeff Jarrett would run in and attack the Crippler from behind, causing a disqualification. Post-match, Double J stomping away on Benoit when Mongo would come running down to brawl with Jarrett as well, followed by Malenko running down to brawl with the Crippler. But Michael hits a clothesline and Uranagi to send Double J bailing, while Benoit sends Dean out to the floor as we head to break.
They're racking them up.
At least we got Dean and Benoit in the ring together.
To knock them down later. I mean, yeah, of course. That's all I really wanted. This show is just an hour-long match between Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
We come back to the Nitro girls dancing once again.
That's right. Bend and snap.
We go to our seventh match. Vincent versus Booker T with Stevie Ray. We haven't seen Vincent wrestle since Royal Rumble 94.
Good Lord.
Episode 110. And Vince attacks from behind to start, but Booker fights him off with a knee to the gut and an axe kick, before a leaping forearm sends Vincent bailing out to the floor. And Vincent decides he's had enough wrestling for 3 years, but Stevie clotheslines him and rolls him back in, allowing Booker T to drill Vince with the Harlem Sidekick for the pin and the win. Post-match, Harlem Heat works Vincent over some more before tossing him out of the ring to celebrate.
R.I.P. Virgil.
Yeah. He was never a wrestler. He was, he had his boxing match and
he had his striped a diamond pants. Belt.
Yeah. He was over for a short amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
Which was pretty cool for him, but...
Like, I remember being a kid and watching the Million Dollar Man and Virgil together and watching Million Dollar Man treat him like shit constantly and just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, hoping that one day he was going to get his revenge. And then along comes a fine Scotsman in his kilt, and we finally see some Virgil breaking away from old money bags. And yeah, it was a hot run for a little while there.
It was, and if you go back and listen to those episodes, I defended it up and down, even though Virgil wasn't particularly great. It was one of those things where it's like, it has to happen eventually, and people, they didn't wait too long, even though it was a long time, but they didn't, yeah. And when it was long enough to where it still mattered when it happened.
Yeah.
So it was nice and feel good, even though the holes in the ring were abundant.
Mean Gene's on the ramp, and he introduces Diamond Dallas Page.
Bang.
Who comes out to say that most people have thought he was conceited for most of his life. However, they eventually realize that he's just convinced. And DDP continues that he knew where he wanted to go and what he needed to do to get there, by busting his chops and giving 120%. Before talking about his opponent tonight, Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And Page says he respects the Nature Boy. They've never had an issue, as they both hate Hogan and Savage. But recently, Nate has been courting Kurt Hennig, who DDP does have an issue with. And as far as Page is concerned, Hennig is a horseman. And if Kurt thinks feeding Flair to Page will stop him from making it to Sturgis, I don't think so.
I mean, I never quite realized that DDP was so over in early in 97, but he stays over from now until the end of WCW.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He kind of takes the spot that maybe Sting should have had more consistently early in his career, or the spot that Sting would have now if he was not a gothic mime at this point. But, you know, who better to do it? Might as well be Diamond.
Canyon? He said who better, and I went Canyon.
Yeah. 5 comedy points.
We go to our 8th match, The Barbarian versus Wrath with James Vandenberg. And we haven't seen Barbie since Nitro, February 24th, 1997. Episode 244.
I know, he looks different.
Like he's grown up. Finally.
Almost like he stopped working out so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got that dad bod.
Yeah, he still looks like an ass kicker, obviously. Oh, but yeah, it's like, oh, he's not, he doesn't look like a He-Man toy.
Barbarian goes right after Wrath, clubbing him in a corner, but he misses a charge, allowing Wrath to put Barbie down with a clothesline and an elbow drop for a 2 count. Wrath continues with chops, kicks, clotheslines, and a back suplex before heading up top for a flying clothesline. And Wrath goes for another suplex, only for Barbarian to block and reverse into one of his own, sending Wrath rolling out to regroup. But Barbie follows out to keep up the attack, sending Wrath into the still steps, before also ramming back first into a ring post.
Posted.
Back in the ring, Barbarian's clubbering away, but he misses a big boot, only to nail a power slam. So Barbie then heads up top, where he leaps off, only for Wrath to catch and drop him with the death penalty for the pin and the win.
Boo.
That's his move's name, is the death penalty?
Yeah. It's a horrible name.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be different if he had, like, a jury, a judge, something like that gimmick, but
I don't know. I don't think it's
wrath
the worst
and
name.
Death penalty just don't sound like, have it be the seven deadly sins or something like that.
I don't know. I don't think it's that bad. It's whatever. It's like, wrath's not going to... We all know wrath doesn't fucking matter. Mm. The real sad thing is that at this point, neither does our buddy Barbie.
No.
But hey, he's been around for a long time.
He only matters, you know, like one match out of the year when they need somebody to challenge an occasional champion. Because, yeah, that was the last time I really remember him mattering.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not...
I guess he had his little Faces of Fear feuds with Ming against different tag teams. But yeah, before that, he was... an opponent for Ron Simmons as champion in WCW.
Yeah,
and that was when he mattered for that month and a half.
Yeah, he mattered in the mid to late 80s, mostly.
Yes.
Post-match, Wrath stands over the Barbarian when Ming would arrive, staring him down. So Vandenberg grabs his client, and they head to the back.
Uh-oh.
I mean, the more Ming, the better. We all agree.
Mean Gene is then in the ring, welcoming the Steiners. And Rick and Scott make their way out, only to stop and look back at the entrance when Ted DiBiase would walk out.
Here come the money.
I mean, it's great that Ted DiBiase is getting away from the NWO because there was no need for him there.
They head to the ring together with Okerlund wanting some answers because we haven't seen DiBiase since Super Brawl 7, episode 243. And Ted says he's been inside the NWO looking out, and now he's on the outside looking in. And sometimes you just have to back up, take a deep breath, and look at what's really important.
What they realized was, we have Ted DiBiase, we're paying him, and there's nothing for him to do, and he's the kind of guy that should be on camera, because everybody knows who he is, and it's not too late.
Yep.
DiBiase used to live by the cliche, every man has his price. But that means that every man pays the price for his choices, and he made some bad ones. He has seen the error of his ways and knows he has to prove himself to everybody, which will start this Saturday in Sturgis, as they will take the heart out of the NWO by taking back the WCW Tag Team titles.
Love to hear it.
The Outsiders then make their way out, saying they've had enough of Ted's sob story. But clearly he doesn't understand what NWO for life means. And that if he joins the Steiners, he's a dead man.
You're gonna murder him?
DiBiase says he knows more about the Outsiders than anybody. And the Steiners will have that info on Saturday. When Nash responds that Rick and Scott only got Ted, so they had someone to read the menus to them as we head to commercial.
That is actually kind of funny.
It's a pretty good burn.
Back from the break, more Nitro Girls before getting the road report from Lee Marshall.
What else is he good for?
Holy.
And I didn't care enough to write anything else about Lee Marshall, so we go to our ninth match.
Good.
Psychosis with Sonny Ono versus Conan. K-Dog is now a member of the NWO.
Why?
Having joined a couple of weeks earlier.
They're just pushing him right on through every little thing.
I mean, I like Conan, but...
because the originals have gotten a little old and boring, and I guess Buff is probably in Japan wrestling, so they need somebody to be here.
Just, yeah, I mean, I guess I can... I've probably said the same thing before, but I just... the NWO being heels... and then the WCW being kind of split between heels and faces undercuts every single WCW heel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking stupid. And it sucks. And it forces things like Conan, who has no business being in the NWO, but was doing good heel work, to basically have to be in the NWO for him being a heel to matter. It's obnoxious and stupid, and a plan that is poorly put together by people who don't know what they're doing.
So Conan hammers away to start before nailing a rolling clothesline and a basement dropkick. The Psychosis responds with a hip toss, back elbow, and a top rope spinning heel kick for a two count. Psychosis continues with a slingshot splash for a near fall, but K-Dog catches and plants Psychosis with a cradle DDT on a charge, allowing Conan to lock on the Tequila Sunrise for the submission and the win. Glad we're doing Psychosis good here.
Yeah.
Post-match.
With the manager.
Yeah.
Taking a loss that the manager had no involvement in. What the fuck?
Post-match, Rey Mysterio Jr. hobbles his way to the ring on crutches to get in K-Dog's face, only for the crutches to be kicked away. And Conan goes to pick one up when Mysterio smacks K-Dog over the back with the other before showing the whole world his knee is all better.
Tricky little Rey.
Yep, and it's not a terrible angle, but it's they're like hot-shotting the issue. It's like, okay, we'll do this quickly.
Well, Conan, like, Conan had hurt Mysterio.
Yeah, but it's like, well, why did he have to do this with Psychosis? A guy that's like been pretty over and been doing pretty great work lately.
Yeah, because could have probably taken anybody from this next match and done that.
Yeah. Looking at you, Silver King and Damien.
Yeah.
So we go to our 10th match. Silver King and Damien versus Glacier and Ernest the Cat Miller. And the last time we saw Damien was as Galaxy on Nitro from February 24th, 1997, episode 244.
He's not Damien 666.
He is only Damien here.
Yeah, but it's the same guy.
Yeah.
Oh, it is the same? Okay.
Yeah, it's the same guy. He's built like a, you know, tree trunk.
See, I'm just trying to picture Galaxy.
Yeah, I don't remember Galaxy.
He wore a mask.
Okay. That explains it.
So remember the crab guy, though?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
King and the Cold One started us off with traded strikes, when Glacier would run the ropes, only for Damien to trip him up from the floor. But Silver King misses a senton, allowing the Cold One to work him over in a corner, before nailing a power slam for a two count. And the Cat is tagged in, only to be hit from behind by Damien, allowing King and Damien to double team him with a corner splash and an assisted dropkick. The Cat then avoids a double clothesline and delivers some kicks and a hip toss before bringing in Glacier to hit a back body drop for a near fall as Silver King breaks it up. And the Cold One takes out both men with a double clothesline, bringing Miller back in to nail more kicks before slamming King and heading up top, while Glacier thrust kicks Silver King out of the ring. The Cold One then distracts Damien, allowing the Cat to leap off the ropes with a roundhouse kick for the pin and the win.
So there was that.
It happened.
Eric Bischoff then makes his way to the ring, and he says he has some business to take care of, saying there are three people he has no love for. The Giant, Larry Zbysko, and he never says a third name.
Oh, Eric. Maybe it's Larry.
Maybe it was the people. I don't know.
There you go. That could be. Or maybe he's counting the Giant as two people.
Maybe. Eric continues that everyone saw the total disregard for law and order that was demonstrated last week. So he's going to address it right now with JJ, I need a new diet.
Boo.
Dylan.
Okay, so maybe there's number three right there.
Yeah. Bischoff says the reality is that the big idiot Giant chokeslammed him. And according to his attorneys, if the big man lays another finger on him, he will sue Giant for everything his grandchildren will ever own.
Okay, so maybe
like
he was.
You guys are the interlopers here. You don't work for the WCW or whatever. Like, the NWO is a separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to bring lawyers into it? Logic. We all have like a built-in logic gap as wrestling fans for things where it's like, well, I get it. But this just doubles down and points out exactly what doesn't make sense about everything. All the time.
Let us not forget, Hulk Hogan tried to murder the Giant by pushing him off of a building.
Yeah. And it was
he didn't get sued.
Yeah, still more believable than this conversationally.
Now, as far as Zbyszko goes, Eric won't sue him. But if Larry lays another finger on Bischoff, he's going to take his left foot and kick him right between the eyes. And Dylan just says he doesn't have to deliver any message because he is sure they heard, and walks off to the back, laughing, as we go to break.
Dylan gets it. I mean, obviously, we know Dylan gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't overperform. Knows exactly what he's doing. Incredibly comfortable. I mean, he's one of the best managers of all time, and he does it here with less than, like, 20 words.
More Nitro girls, this time around the announce table when we return. The announcers all wishing they wouldn't leave when it's time for our 11th match. Diamond Dallas Page with Kimberly versus the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
I mean, come on. This is what... These are the things we want to talk about.
This is a pay-per-view match on Nitro.
Yeah, a week before a pay-per-view. They will have to have both of these men on it because... It can't be filled with Silver King and Wrath.
Don't forget, we've got old Damien.
Oh, yeah.
He's back. Sorry.
As Nate walks out, he would turn around, and Kurt Hennig would come out to shake Flair's hand, only to return to the back.
Mind games.
Now, once the ring, our two competitors trade strikes to begin, until DDP back body drops the Nature Boy, followed by a sit-out powerbomb, which brings Hennig running down the aisle as we go to commercial. He might as well have just come out with it.
Yeah,
well, he saw that powerbomb and was like, oh no, Nature Boy's in trouble.
We come back to an NWO ad where Hall and Nash shill the new t-shirt that says, For Life, on it.
Yeah, they're like, hey, how about we sell more NWO shirts? What if we wrote For Life directly underneath it and didn't change a thing?
Call now, 1-900-909-9900. Phone number is no longer in operation.
Back to the action, Nate is working over Paige in a corner with chops and right hands before a reversed whip sends DDP also eating a back elbow, allowing Flair to go up top, only for Paige to press slam him down. They trade more strikes when the Nature Boy goes for a hip toss, but DDP counters into a swinging neckbreaker before turning his attention to Kurt, who had climbed up onto the apron. And Nate uses the distraction to chop block from behind, using chops and a running knee drop to control until Paige is able to retaliate with a clothesline. But Flair is right back on the offensive to lock on the figure four, forcing DDP to make the ropes. And the Nature Boy does some strutting before drilling Paige with jabs and going to the apron to attempt to suplex DDP out to the floor, only for Paige to block and reverse, bringing Nate in the hard way. And DDP applies a figure four of his own, when Flair would poke the ref in the eye, allowing Hennig to jump in the ring. But Paige cradles him up while still in the figure four.
Yeah.
He cradles him up. But Kurt breaks loose and rolls to the floor just as the ref recovers. The Nature Boy makes the ropes, forcing the break. But Paige continues to hammer away on Nate in a corner before whipping for a Flair flip, where he lands on the apron and runs to the next turnbuckle, coming off with a double axe handle, only for DDP to nail the Nature Boy with a clothesline in midair. Paige would deliver a pancake and call for the cutter, but Kurt jumps in the ring to throw a punch, so the ref calls for the disqualification. Post-match, DDP blocks that punch, ripping some brass knucks off of Hennig's fist and tosses them to the ref. And Hennig and Nate double-team Paige until he's able to respond with a double clothesline, sending them bailing towards the back. And I was like, I know you're a good guy, DDP, but the bell's already rung. This is not a match.
Yep.
Use the effing brass knucks, bro.
Yeah, you would get a pop for sure. I mean, but this was nice to see after some of the things we've been seeing up to this point. It's like, well, at least both these guys are starred.
Something that wasn't 100% garbage.
Yay!
And there's been like 11 matches.
Yeah, there's been some like squashy stuff that's not garbage, but it's like, what do we? There's no reason for this.
Because we gotta fill 3 hours.
No reason for it to be 3 hours. And if you're gonna get an extra hour, you gotta do a little more with it.
If you ever want people to tune in for your next extra hour, make this one worth it.
So we go to our 12th match. Los Villanos of 4-5 versus Lizmar Jr. and Hector Garza.
And this is where I didn't have... It's like, no, please don't make me watch this. This is where I was at in this. It's like, this doesn't mean anything. And I've already watched a bunch of matches that don't mean anything, but this one means even less.
Like, why is this match number 12?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
So number four...
This means less than Silver King and Damien because at least Glacier and Ernest are being used regularly. Doesn't mean that it's going to be a not won't be a better match or whatever, but like as far as meaning something at all.
Those Villanos 4 and 5 are already stars. I don't even remember 1, 2, or 3.
It's a long line. Don't worry. There'll be a, you know, a 5 and a 6. Or I guess 5's here. A 6 and a 7. We're probably up to 12 at this point here in 2023.
Number 4 puts Hector down with a clothesline to begin. Chops away in a corner. Only for Garza to fire back with a clothesline, a springboard head scissors takedown, and a faceplant. And Lizmark's tagged in to hit a dropkick, sending 4 close enough to tag in 5. So Junior tries for another, only for Villano 5 to duck and take over with chops. After a whip, 5 is monkey flipped and arm dragged, before Lizmark also delivers a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker for a 2 count.
Love to see it.
And the Villanos team up to hotshot Junior, followed by a leg drop for a near fall, as Garza breaks up the pin, allowing Lizmark to make it to the corner for attack. And Hector goes for a corner splash, but 4 avoids, bringing his brother in to nail a double gutbuster and an apron guillotine leg drop that sees Garza fall out to the floor, where Villano 4 hits a baseball slide dropkick that sends Hector into a guardrail before ramming him headfirst into a ring post.
Posted.
Now back in the ring, Garza avoids a corner charge and bouncing out with clotheslines to both Villanos and making a tag. So Lizmark can come in with a dropkick that sends number 4 to the floor. And 5 starts to fire back when Hector flies in off the top with an arm drag and a dropkick to send Villano 5 out to the floor. Followed by Lizmark leaping over the top rope with a crossbody atop 5. Now inside the ring, 4 and Garza continue, with Villano 4 being back body dropped over the ropes atop the other 2 competitors. Hector then heads up top and hits a corkscrew plancha onto everybody. And Junior and 5 get back in the ring for Lizmark to nail a pair of drop kicks and a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. He goes for the cover, but the ref is distracted by Garza yelling about 4 coming into the ring. And Junior goes to calm him down, allowing the Villanos to switch places. So when Lizmark comes back over, number 4 cradles him up for the pin and the win.
This is a classic.
Twin magic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is a very old classic wrestling thing to do. Well, it doesn't really have any doesn't make beyond the show. Like the finish, it's like, okay, fine.
It's what the Villanos do.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's on the show with the classic wrestler, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Mean Gene and J.J. Dillon then make their way to the ring. And Oakland asks about the Sting rumors, with JJ reminding us that it's been almost a year since anyone in WCW had talked to him. Some had questioned his loyalties, and trust is a powerful commodity.
You think he sends his pet crow to get his paycheck?
Dillon understands better than anybody how the Stinger must have felt. And maybe Sting has dealt with the situation better than management, because his actions prove he is with WCW. However, the lines of communication are still down, but WCW desperately needs the Stinger.
Get him, JJ.
JJ says he's been here all day and has not seen Sting, but he's heard from reliable sources that he would be here, wishing the Stinger would come look him in the eye so they can talk things over. And Dylan continues that he has an opponent for Sting. He just needs him to come down and sign the contract. And the crowd begins to erupt as everybody looks to the rafters to see the Stinger rappelling down to the ring. And JJ tells Sting that they are past the point of apologies and he can't undo what happened before he was put in place. But he pledges to rebuild the trust before offering the Stinger a contract to face Kurt Hennig.
I mean, what a great first match in a year for Sting, and what a great way to bring Kurt in a big way. I mean, he's been doing a little bit of stuff, but nothing of note ring-wise yet.
Can you imagine 1990 Kurt Hennig versus 1990 Sting? That'd be great.
It would be good.
That'd be an awesome match. You
know, Sting could...
Dream match!
Yeah, Sting could definitely have followed Hennig's lead at that point mm-hmm. in his career.
Sting grabs the contract, but rips it in half. Starts to leave, only for JJ to grab his arm.
Hey, oh, whoa, whoa.
But the Stinger shrugs it off and heads to the back. All while Mean Gene is pleading for Sting to reconsider. Tony does point out that the Stinger never even read the contract, wondering where we go from here as we head to break. And we come back to Nitro Girls dancing in the aisles.
They're running out of places to dance.
Yep. Can we get Alex right back out here?
But we get our 13th match. Lex Luger versus Hollywood Hogan for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. And Michael Buffer makes the announcement, so let's get ready to see how Hollywood gets out of this one. So the two men lock up several times, with neither gaining an advantage, until Hogan lands a shot to the gut and starts to pound away with right hands, stomps, and chokes, before dropping elbows and hitting multiple clotheslines. Hollywood continues with a body slam and more chokes before several turnbuckle smashes until Lex blocks and reverses for a few of his own. And Luger's firing away with a flurry of kicks, but the ref steps in between them to get them out of the corner, allowing Hogan to rake the eyes and pose as we go to break. And we come back to Lex trapped in a bear hug, releasing it only to suplex Luger for a two count, followed by a back suplex for a near fall. More chops, boots, and chokes from Hollywood, spinning on Lex before delivering the big boot, body slam, and the leg drop for the pin. And no, Luger kicks out.
Well, I knew it was going to be a two count because the body slam in between the big boot and the leg drop.
That's right. He fucked up the flow.
Hogan tries for a second leg drop, but only for Lex to roll out of the way and nail a running forearm.
You're stealing that elbow.
Scott Hall hits the ring, but Luger meets him with a clothesline.
Get it.
Nash begins to climb in, but Lex whips Hall into him, sending them both tumbling out to the floor. Macho Man heads up top, but Luger catches him with a right hand on his way down, before hitting another forearm to Hollywood and tossing Savage to the floor.
We want Sting.
Hogan staggers to his feet, with Lex lifting him up into the torture rack for the submission and the win, as Randy Anderson screams for the bell with a look of elation on his face.
I mean, don't we all have one?
And new!
Thanks for joining us, Shane.
Thank you.
The crowd explodes as Luger drops Hollywood to the mat, while the WCW locker room empties into the ring to celebrate with Lex.
Ah, feels good.
Mm-hmm.
They make their way to the back with Luger holding the belt up high as our commentators recap this moment in Nitro history.
And I keep waiting for Eric to walk out saying, wait, 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 hold up, hold up.
I mean, this telegraphed a lot for me, considering that we're going to Sturgis, but feels good right now.
Mm-hmm.
Tony then sends us backstage where more celebrating is happening, where champagne's flowing and the giant is scrubbing the spray paint off the belt.
I mean, this is wonderfully, like, wonderful post-match babyface champion win stuff. By the book. And it works.
We then cut to Hollywood flipping out in another room, saying he will get the belt back at Sturgis, while Savage calls it a fluke.
My God, or something. I can't remember what the hell he was saying. But
we go back to the commentators to congratulate Lex once again, followed by slow motion replay of Hogan submitting. For Shivani says his goodbyes, and we fade to black. So I ask you, gentlemen, what are your overall thoughts of WCW Monday Night Nitro from August 4th, 1997?
They could have set up everything that they set up on this show for the Sturgis show in a two-hour Nitro and not lost anything. That being said, J.J. Dillon, Sting, Luger win, all very positive. Nice to see Kurt Hennig here. DDP and Ric Flair was also a highlight, and with neither man losing, as neither of them should be taking a pin from one another, not on pay-per-view. But 60 minutes of this we did not need.
I would have been happy with only 60 minutes of this.
Yeah, you definitely agree. I mean, yeah, the truly important stuff we could have done in probably a cool 45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's... Oh, my God. There's so much more that I dislike about this show than I like about this show.
But...
It has...
You won't remember... I mean, we will because...
Because we had to watch it.
Because we had to watch it in this year of our Lord. Is it 2024?
Yeah.
Yes, God, we watched it 27 years later.
Yeah, but at the moment, it's like... You're stoked, and by the next week, all you remember is, you know, the last match. But revisiting it now, it's just like, what was the point of all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the... I think you mentioned every shining star moment that I can think of, with the exception of we got to see Alex Wright dance.
Yep.
And he was fun.
Yeah, he's gotten quite a bit better since... We first saw him a few years ago. The Steiners, obviously, getting a huge pop because they're in Michigan. Of course, the Steiners get a big pop.
They didn't think about that.
Anywhere, but, you know, that was nice. It would have been cool. They
even
had
when,
a match.
Yeah, even when they said Michigan's favorite sons, I didn't even think, hey, we're in Michigan. Because I was just kind of sitting there with my hand on my cheek, just like staring blankly at the TV screen of, all right, what do we got next?
Yeah. They don't win you over quicker.
Not the worst show I've ever seen. Nowhere near the best show I've ever seen. And maybe like 45 minutes worth of stuff worth seeing, if even that much.
For a so-called 100th episode, and I'm throwing air quotes around that, you would think that they would do more for the show. Literally the only thing they did was give us this title match and make it a 3-hour show. It's really the only thing special they really did.
I mean, Dillon and Sting, but
that could have been on any show. That could have been on any show, though.
Yeah, that could have been the pre-show.
But it was meant for the big moment, and the big moment works.
Absolutely.
But it is the only thing that's worth watching on this show.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, I would say that and the Dillon of it all. Well, that happens basically right before the last match, so you can scrub to there. Let it play out for the 15 minutes, and you'll probably have a pretty good time. The bitter truth of it all is that I'm like, okay, feel like I know what's going to happen now. And you'll have to show up next week to find out if I'm right or not. But it is that thing where it's like, oh, well, I know how this works. So the feel-good moment happens, and then I'm immediately a little bummed just to, because I can't convince myself otherwise of what I'll be getting into shortly.
Good. Where's the smart marks at?
There.
All right. Fuck you.
I think it's time we smark it up. So what are some of the best moments of this show?
I really liked Alex Wright's promo. Of course, the J.J. Dillon, Kurt Hennig of it all. But, I mean, the best moment is Lex Luger has fought off the NWO a bunch of times and still not been able to walk away with the gold. He does it here, and they do the perfect and classic baby faces to the ring, to the back, the extra cherry on top of the giant washing off the paint was nice. It's something that we don't see super often, and this, of course, win means something considering that the NWO have been holding this thing hostage for a year now. I mean, I feel like the last, you know, we rarely see the full babyface locker come out anymore. I mean, we just saw it recently with WrestleMania, and didn't it feel good, guys? Isn't it nice? And yeah.
I remember thinking in that moment of, oh wow, they still do this.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. And then to watch this show and be like, yep, it always feels good. It never. It might be corny or trite, but it doesn't not work.
Like, I'm scrolling through the notes here trying to find what jumps out at me as the best moment, and I don't know if I have one for this show. Because, I mean, yeah, I know of the show the best moment would be Lex winning the belt, but I just...
I mean, it's literally the best moment of the show. Yeah. Like, it's the only moment of the show. I know I'm doing the same exact thing.
I didn't enjoy the show. I mean, yeah, Lex won, but I didn't even enjoy Lex winning.
Because you had to go through all that first.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things that because I know what, like, ahead of time, like, it's like I know exactly why Hogan decided to lay down. So it doesn't feel as good as I want it to, but it still did feel good. Maybe it's because I just needed something to take away from this almost 3-hour show.
Well, let's move to most disappointing, because I feel like we might have a few more things to say.
The thing is like, most of the time when we're upset, I have more things to complain about. And here, I don't know if I do. It's just like...
I mean, I'm right there with you.
Well,
I was like,
disappointed then.
I am disappointed, but it's one of those things that's like, there's nothing...
No, I mean, I'm disappointed that you don't have anything to be disappointed about.
No, like anything that's
worth mentioning.
It's even worth mentioning, because it's like, oh, it's all... It's like...
It's just all blah.
Yeah.
It's nothing... That's the biggest thing about this show. It's not a bad show.
But it is not a good show.
But
it is
not a good show, entertaining show, anything... that you need to watch.
Yeah.
It's
I would say it's
just very like that. We're just going to throw all these things out here because people are going to sit here and watch this until
we get to it.
Until we get to the final.
Mm-hmm. 2/3 of the show is just, it's like 2 WCW Saturday nights with 1 hour of Nitro.
Yes,
sprinkled through it.
What they did
is what
was,
it is.
They took the new Saturday night's main event format of Monday Nitro and Monday Night Raw, but then they went old school with it where they had everybody wrestle people that nobody gave a fuck about.
So I'm like, why is Vincent having a match? Why?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Eric Bischoff, every time he comes out on the mic anymore, I'm just kind of like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. He is the worst.
Well, also, I complain about the logic, but I do it constantly with NWO, but it's... You gotta do better at trying to make sense of all of this. And it just seems silly. He's talking about suing people. I get it. You're the like chicken shit heel who thinks he's cool, but you have no legs to stand on in a court of law here at all, because you guys are a like gang essentially. So there's gotta be a better way to come at this.
How about best performer of the night?
I'm going to give it to the Nitro girls. They were there. They performed nonstop.
I'm giving it to Liz Mark Jr.
There you go.
That match is actually my favorite match of the night.
I mean, yeah, it's super entertaining. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, I don't care about any of this, but it was, yeah.
It was the best match of the night.
It was a ping pong, it was like when you get the bonus in ping pong and now you're juggling four, not ping pong, pinball.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, why did I say
ping pong? Bonus in ping pong?
What? Yeah, the bonus in pinball, and it's like you're juggling four balls and you're just like, ah. Like, yeah, everybody's just bouncing off of each other. It's all smooth. They all know exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It looks good. Fortunately, it doesn't mean much.
It didn't mean anything at all.
But it's, eye candy.
Because the Villanos or Liz Martin Jr. and Hector Garza are anywhere ever near the tag team belts, it'll be the surprise of, like, the century.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, Kevin Nash and Scott Hart aren't working a match with any of those four guys.
No, they don't work on Saturdays. Well, I guess it's not technically a Saturday on the show either.
They couldn't. All they could do is, slam those guys around like they're Sam Houston and let them bump. But, there's no reason, and nobody even wants to see it.
Nope.
And how about most surprising?
I was stoked to see J.J. Dillon. That's my biggest surprise. I felt like that the win for the title belt was, like, telegraphed. For me personally, I was like, oh, well, Lex is going to win. And when he did, I was surprised.
Why would you have the title match the Monday before the pay-per-view?
The reason is, it's like, oh, so Hogan can win it.
So I can boost the TV rating and hopefully get some pay-per-view buys.
And get one more championship win to my name than Bret Hart.
I mean, I can't see Lex, like, that. I can't see that being Lex's, like...
No, Hogan's.
Oh, Hogan's.
Yeah.
Oh,
Lex is just happy to have a title win.
Okay.
Hogan, as it was announced, I want to say, when Bret won last time that...
Well, I said it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you said it. But it was... Since you said it this far in the future, somebody was thinking it that far in the past that, well, now he's got as many wins as Hogan, or almost as many. My surprising thing was Hogan tapped as fast as he did, because there wasn't really any length of time whatsoever. He got put in the rack, and you could immediately see his hand up in the air. So, not that I'm surprised that Hogan's a bad actor, but that he just gave in as quickly as he did.
Yeah.
I just thought of two more good moments, just... quick ones, but wiping the spray paint off of the belt was a good moment. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And the J.J. Dillon laugh at the end of the Bischoff segment, which was kind of made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, just being just, like, yeah, you're a joke.
Yeah, because he is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, every time Bischoff comes on the screen at this point, I just kind of like roll my eyes because I'm like, what are we going to say now that doesn't make any sense?
Welcome to 1997, because that's how I felt 99% of the time, or I'll even say 97% of the time.
You know, also,
Bischoff was on my TV back then.
If Bischoff could have just not gotten involved in the NWO thing, mm-hmm. Ted DiBiase would have been great as the Bischoff part.
I mean, that's what he was supposed to be.
I know, and it would have been good, because he can talk, and he can even say stuff that doesn't make... He can say things that don't make logical sense, in a way that you find more believable, because he's Ted DiBiase. Mm-hmm. He's a professional. Mm-hmm. He did it. That's what he's most famous for. Yeah, he was a big brawling like tag guy in like Mid-South, but as the Million Dollar Man, he said nothing but untrue things that he believed, and people hated him for it.
And
he knows how to do that. It's kind of his bread and butter.
He believed and made people believe them.
Exactly. Whereas... He could say exactly what Bischoff said here tonight, and none of us would be complaining about it.
Yeah.
We'd be like, well, yeah, that's the character, but when Bischoff does it, there's just no bass in the voice. There might be confidence, but it's unearned confidence.
And see, Bischoff saying, I'm going to put my foot right between his eyes, is laughable, whereas DiBiase says that, and it's like, yeah, okay, I kind of want to see that.
Yeah, we all know that...
Fuck up Zabisco for me.
Everybody knows that he's a past ass kicker. Whether they saw it or didn't, everybody believes it.
And now for a look back even further into the history of wrestling.
The dusty finish.
after Shane Douglas threw down the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, the organization struggled to find any national relevance, but would hold another tournament on November 19th, 1994, in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Chris Candido, born 1972, is a second-generation wrestler, the grandson of Popeye Chuck Richards. Candido would begin training at age 14 with Larry Sharp and making his debut in 1986. By 92, Chris had made his way to Smoky Mountain Wrestling, winning the junior heavyweight, TV, and tag team championships with the help of Tammy Lynn Sitch. Candido would defeat Al Snow, Dirty White Boy, and Tracy Smothers to win the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship that day. Chris would defend the title over the next few months, mostly in Smoky Mountain Wrestling and on the independent circuit, when an Ultimate Fighting Champion would make a challenge.
I don't know Popeye Chuck Richards.
Me neither, but Jeebus, he was seriously 14 years old when he made his debut. Yeah. Dang.
Pretty wild. It was like 86. So, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, he made his debut and then almost 10 years later, I think, was when he debuted in WWF.
Well, I mean, he's literally
crazy.
26 years old right now in 1997.
I mean, pretty wild.
Or 25 years old, I'm sorry.
Just think of what we could have had, such a sad story. No, most people don't start wrestling at 14. Bret Hart probably started at 14. And, like, yeah.
He probably started locking up with his brothers in the womb.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those original...
But Jeff Hardy started in this...
High velocity.
In his backyard. It's not the same as...
High voltage, not velocity.
Yeah, is being trained by Larry Sharp.
Next week, Road Wild 1997.
Going to the, is it Black Hills?
Sturgis. The Black Hills of South Dakota.
Was the first one called Road Wild or was it called Hog Wild?
It was called Hog Wild.
Okay. Okay, cool. Just making sure.
Yeah,
they got sued by
Harley Davidson. That last time.
Yeah. Music from this week's show is Firestorm. And Lex Luger won our main event, so we play his music, Slammer by Derek Todd Sorensen.
Pull out your pogs.
If you like this episode or any of our other ones, please go out there, rate, review us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts at. Do as Michael says.
5 stars or no stars. That's more than a 5-star show, but we deserve it for watching the damn thing.
That's right.
We are.
We watched it, so you don't have to unless you really want to.
We even told you where to start.
If you have any questions, comments, concerns.
You got a Harley? You ever been to Sturgis? Rev up your motors, people, because we're headed to South Dakota. I need some ideas of what the fuck people eat in South Dakota, because even though I grew up in Nebraska, I never went north enough to make it even across the state line into the South Dakota.
I imagine Sturgis is Budweiser and hot dogs.
Well, I brought a hot dog thing this time, and I usually don't eat it that quickly.
No, I'm just saying, it's like, what were they eating in Sturgis? There wasn't beer, and it's like, well, probably just hot dogs. I'm sure there was a grill every, like, 40 feet.
This is great food trucks.
But you can send any of those things to our email at WrestlingHistoryX@gmail.com or find us on X at WrestlingHistoX. That's Wrestling HistoX. We'll talk to you next week.
See you later. Laters.